There was only one flight Stonyman Intelligence could conclude met all the criteria. If Bear was wrong, his efforts this night would be for naught. But Bolin had confidence that the Stonyman cybernetics genius was right on the money. Kurtzman's intuition told him it reeked of an NIF operation, and the executioner had to agree. The flight was scheduled to depart just after midnight. It was a Gulfstream 4 SP, supposedly a round-trip charter for 6 passengers, with a final destination of Rio de Janeiro via one stop in Mexico City for refueling. Kurtzman wasn't buying it, and neither was Mac Bolin. That was an unusual route, at best, and the normal flight plan for a private charter jet of that type and range would have called for a straight shot. An expert had advised that the fuel capacity of that make provided enough range to get across the Atlantic. Under questioning by FBI, the charter company advised that the deposit and final trip costs had been paid via a cashier's check, and that the renter had promised any monies owed at the end of the flight in cash. They had also promised that a list of passengers would be provided upon their arrival and not earlier, citing that the sensitive nature of their business prohibited disclosure any earlier than that. Way too suspicious, and Bolin was on it. He broke from his study of the airfield ahead of him long enough to check his watch, 20 minutes before takeoff. The flight crew had arrived and was obviously engaged in pre-flight checks, but there was still no sign of the terrorists. The executioner could only hope he'd guessed correctly. After all, it had occurred to him that even if this were the NIF, it was entirely possible they had engineered the entire thing to throw any observers off the track. If life had taught Bolin anything, it was to never underestimate the enemy. This enemy was particularly unpredictable, with the knowledge and resources necessary to counter even the best and most effective anti-terrorist tactics. Still, those who operated inside an organization such as the New Islamic Front could become lackadaisical when allowed to operate too long domestically. And they were finding it increasingly difficult to smuggle people into the country, let alone the various weapons of destruction at their disposal. Even so, it was more difficult to stop computers because they knew no physical boundaries and controlled nearly everything. Bolin could see the brilliance and terror in the NIF's plan. He couldn't blow it. He had to shut it down.
What exactly are we waiting for?
From the information you gave my people, we think that the NIF is going to attempt to get this hacker out of the country tonight.
How?
On that plane, out there all by its lonesome.
You know, I could have stayed at the motel while you did this.
No, it was time to move you. I trust our security measures, but not to such a degree that I'm comfortable with keeping you in one place for too long.
So, you want me to believe that I'm safer running around the East Coast and confronting terrorists directly instead of sitting in some little motel that probably no one's ever heard of?
Yes.
She studied him a moment longer with her usual expression of skepticism before shrugging and facing front to look at the plane again.
Whatever you say, Cooper.
I know it doesn't make sense to you, but you're going to have to trust me on this. You're worth a hell of a lot to me alive, sure, but to the NIF, you're worth even more dead. I don't have a field resource available right now with your technical expertise. Until I nail these bastards, I want you within arm's reach.
Can we turn on the heat?
Negative. Someone might see the exhaust.
Well, it's gonna fog up pretty quickly, and then you're not gonna be able to see anything.
Then I'll stand in the rain.
But you'll get soaked!
Wait a minute. Look at that. I think we're in business.
He raised the small, compact binoculars and turned the key to the accessory position to wipe away the rain before focusing on the plane. A group of men had exited the small charter building and were headed toward the plane. Bolin did a quick count. 6, with 2 in the middle flanked by 4 corners of significant size. They moved like professionals, and the executioner immediately marked the play as 4 bodyguards for 2 VIPs.
All right, Tyra. You stay here. Keep the doors locked and keep yourself out of sight. If you see me go down, wait 5 minutes and then split. Get back to Washington as fast as you can, and then call my people. They'll arrange to pick you up. Don't call anyone else. Not your mother, not friends, nobody. Otherwise, you'll be signing their death warrants. Understood?
She nodded and opened her mouth to say something else, but Bolin went EBA without giving her the chance to say it. It was high time he finished his business with the NIF, once and for all. Under the protection of nearly a dozen NIF soldiers, Kayat Malik and Ratib watched intently from an overhang near the terminal as a decoy, accompanied by 5 additional NIF soldiers, walked toward the plane. Malik had insisted that his men check it out first, and he didn't plan to allow anything to stand in his way of protecting Ratib. Ratib looked up at Malik, who easily towered over him by a foot or so. His protector was a big man with dark hair and beard and equally dark eyes that were always probing, always scrutinizing everything around them.
Are you sure all of this is necessary?
I am certain.
Malik suddenly grabbed Retief's arm tightly and shoved him backward into the group of NIF bodyguards who immediately surrounded him.
I knew it.
Retief was trying to see, but he couldn't get a clear view past the wall of bodies surrounding him. He crouched and finally caught a glimpse of an almost spectral form, attired in black from head to toe, sprinting toward the plane with the grace of a cheetah. Retief had seen violence before. He'd even received formal training in the arts of combat. He knew enough to defend himself against most attackers, and he could hold his own against even men the size of Malik. But there was something about the Black Angel of Death now crossing the tarmac and leveling an automatic weapon at the group near the plane that sent a painful stab of fear through his heart. And Retief watched helplessly as the muzzle of the weapon put forth flashes of flame, and men, good and brave men of the Eternal Jihad, began to fall under the sudden and swift onslaught of this pervasive and deadly new enemy. MacBolan triggered the FNC, sending two short fusillades in the direction of the group. One of the NIF crew took the first salvo in the face. Two more shared the second burst, one spinning in place before collapsing to the wet pavement. The other knocked off his feet by two rounds to the chest. The remaining NIF guard gestured sharply to the pair of men he'd been guarding, and then shoulder-rolled across the tarmac behind cover of one of the plane's struts. The executioner simultaneously watched for weapons from the pair now searching frantically for cover, but his worry was short-lived as he reached the concealment of an outbuilding just in time to avoid a full burst from the remaining terrorist guard's AKSU. Bolin had to be careful in picking off his targets because he wanted the VIPs in the middle alive at any cost short of his own life. If one of the pair was his mysterious hacker, then that individual held information vital to the electronic security of the entire nation. That was if Bolin were to believe what McEwen had told him, and thus far she'd given him no reason to doubt otherwise. Not to mention, there just plain wasn't anybody else to do it. Bolin fired another salvo, but it wasn't really an attempt to hit his man as much as keep him pinned down until the warrior could form an alternate plan. He watched for only a moment as the two unarmed VIPs standing in the open decided to make for the plane. Bolin turned to watch as one of the Gulfstream's crew members poked his head out the door, trying to get a better look at what was going on. One of the pair rushing the plane suddenly produced a pistol from his jacket and shot the man in the head. Bolin clenched his teeth, biting back the urge to kill the pair there and then. Now the damn civilians were getting blown away, and that wasn't good. It was likely a lot more people would die if the executioner didn't make a decision right now. He did. Bolin drew the .44 Magnum Desert Eagle, leveling the shiny hand cannon, and squeezed the trigger. It was a fleeting moment of judgment for the NIF gunman. The bullet took the guy in the back as he was trying to force his way into the plane, shooting randomly at unseen targets. The man arched his back, reaching behind him as if he'd been shot with an arrow and was trying to pull it out. Suddenly unbalanced, he fell backward onto his companion. The two men toppled from the stairs and landed on the tarmac. Bolin detected sudden movement in his peripheral vision. The executioner looked to his right and saw nearly a dozen well-armed NIF gunmen advancing on his position. Bolin narrowly escaped multiple hits by getting low as bullets zinged over his head, striking a wooden outbuilding. Pieces of wood, plastic, and aluminum rained on his head and back. The icy ground chilled his knees and hands.
Goddamn trap.
After all, the NIF knew about it. Several times already he'd been a target, and now he was still being hunted. But instead of tracking him, they had waited until he'd come to them. Somebody who knew what they were doing was controlling the NIF terrorists. Bolin decided to even the odds a bit, especially if he wanted a fighting chance to get away. As he detached a white phosphorus grenade from his load-bearing gear, he heard the sound of the plane's engines revving up. There was no way in hell he'd be able to stop the plane, put down the advancing enemy, and get out alive. The executioner would have time to square things away later, but at that moment the priority had to be staying alive. He yanked the pin on the grenade and tossed the bomb underhanded into the midst of the advancing terrorists. Many of them were in the midst of reloading clips when the small and seemingly harmless object landed at their feet. The NIF terrorists staggered and fell as their clothing and flesh burned. Bolin peered around the corner and began picking off the terrorists who had managed to avoid the effects of the grenade. He sprayed the area with a few sustained bursts. The executioner watched as a pair of NIF gunners managed to escape the assault and get beyond his line of sight. Bolin knew their plan. They thought he hadn't seen them. They would skirt the building he was using as cover and try to flank him. When they burst from the opposite end of the outbuilding, weapons at the ready, Bolin was waiting for them. The executioner triggered his weapon, cutting a bloody pattern across the chest and stomach of the first terrorist. The guy's intestines and lung tissue erupted from holes in his back as he collapsed to the pavement. His partner was no luckier, as several of the high-velocity rounds caught him at the hip. Bolin finished it with a round through the falling terrorist's head. Bolin reloaded and stepped into view. He started to aim for the tires, but nearly lost his life to the sudden hail of bullets from several more automatic weapons. A few of the NIF terrorists had apparently been instructed to stay behind and cover the escape, and it almost came to a halt right there for the warrior. Bolin managed to drop and roll away from the initial barrage that buzzed the air immediately over his head and blasted chips out of the tarmac. The executioner got to one knee and let fly an angry torrent of rounds. Two terrorists were lifted off their feet by the impacts, the heavy caliber slugs dumping them on the ground in torn, broken, bleeding heaps. Bolin caught another terrorist with a headshot, and he traded a few rounds with a fourth who managed to escape inside the building. The plane was now in position on the runway and ready for takeoff. Bolin looked in its direction, but the sound of shooting inside the small terminal building demanded his attention. There were civilians in there. The executioner spared one more glance at the plane before heading toward the building to dispatch the final terrorist before he could kill any more innocents. Rateeb stared out of the window, watching with fascination as the American headed for the charter service building. Despite the fact he loathed Americans and everything for which they stood, he could not help but admire this man. The guy fought with the bravery and skill of a professional soldier while simultaneously showing the determination and conviction of a demon straight from the pit of hell. But then there was little point in worrying about him now. Rateeb knew it was probably the last he would ever see of the man, or of any American for that matter. Rateeb looked away from the window as Malik, shaking his head, took the seat next to him.
We lost many today.
I'm sorry this had to happen.
You have no reason to be sorry. The American has been a thorn in our side. He keeps finding us, whittling away at our forces. But he does not know that we are strong. He does not know that we have hundreds, even thousands more at our disposal.
Kayat, you know that I love you like a brother, but I do not agree with you on this matter. Surely even you realize that a strong army is not everything. It does not guarantee security, and it certainly does not guarantee freedom for our people from the bonds of the Americans.
Do you not have faith in your own people?
I have faith only in certainty. The only certainty is that we can destroy the Americans only by turning their own precious weapons against them. This is what I know and believe in, and this is what's real to me. Now I must sleep.
Sadiq Rateeb laid his head back and allowed himself to drift to another time and place, a time and place he called home. Jack Grimaldi could not recall a time he'd been happier to see the executioner alive and well.
Sarge, you are one sight for sore eyes. They made it sound as if you were near death. You don't look like hell.
I feel like I am. It's been a fun couple of days.
Bolin shook Grimaldi's hand. Stony Man's ace flyer grinned good-naturedly as he stood next to the jet in his blue flight suit. Warm eyes under thick, bushy eyebrows studied McEwen with a passive interest. The executioner had to admit he was glad to see a familiar face, too. Jack Grimaldi, mob pilot turned Stony Man airborne wizard. He could fly everything from a World War I twin prop to an F-18 fighter jet, with credentials and experience that rivaled even those piloting Air Force One. Grimaldi had accompanied Bolin on thousands of missions, and dropped him into hot LZs and pulled him out of more tight scrapes around the world than either really cared to count. Bolin helped McEwen up the stairwell and into the Learjet C-21A before glancing back at his friend.
You know where we're going?
Yeah, Bear is tracking them now.
Bolin nodded, and without another word, Grimaldi headed for the cockpit and prepared for takeoff. The executioner had contacted Stony Man as soon as possible and requested that Grimaldi be ready and waiting for his arrival at Dulles. They wouldn't have a lot of time, and he needed them to track the plane so they could follow it to wherever the NIF terrorists planned to go. As Grimaldi put the plane in position and waited for takeoff clearance, McEwen turned and looked at Bolin intently.
Why don't we just blow the thing out of the sky?
Because I think those targets I hit at the airport were decoys. And I'm betting that the real mastermind who compromised carnivore security is on that plane. We lose that, we lose our tactical advantage.
I don't see that we really have one.
No. If carnivore is as complicated a system as you described, then we need this NIF hacker alive and well because...
Because otherwise it might take us years to figure out what he's done.
Exactly.
You're assuming this person is a he.
What's your point?
Nothing. It's just that use of such a gender-specific pronoun does indicate a rather egocentric and machismo personality.
Olin shook his head, ready to send a biting reply her way, when she suddenly cast a sideways glance at him and smiled faintly. Okay, so she was teasing him. He could understand that, but it made him uncomfortable. Once they were airborne, McEwen began to work on the signals that were still being pushed into Carnivore. She typed furiously, studied files, and contrasted those files with notes from Mitchell Fowler's journal. Still, she became frustrated and beat her fist on the seat next to her.
What's wrong?
Everything's wrong. I just can't seem to figure out how they got inside Carnivore. And if I can't figure out how they got in, there's no way we can shut them out.
Grimaldi emerged from the cockpit and wandered over, his hands in his pockets.
Hey, I have a question. Why don't we just shut this Carnivore down at the source?
If you're in here, who's flying the plane?
That would be my good buddy, Autopilot. And speaking of friends and introductions, Sarge, where are your manners?
Tyron McEwen, this is Jack.
Nice to meet you, Jack.
Just Jack will do, ma'am.
He smiled at her and gently shook her hand. His unabashed stare made McEwen flash a mischievous smile at Bolin.
Oh, so we've got a charmer here.
Yeah, Jack here is real suave.
I fly a lot. It's a good idea to have a gal in every port.
Right.
Anyway, now that we've dispensed with the pleasantries, Jack makes a good point. Why can't we just shut Carnivore down?
Well, we proposed that once, but if we do that, it will be permanent. Not to mention the fact that Carnivore monitoring systems operate in thousands of different locations. Each locale has to be shut down at the source. That takes time, resources, and security.
Sheesh. Sounds like a government operation, all right.
The jet shimmied just a bit, and McEwen looked at Grimaldi with sudden concern.
Are you sure it's okay there's nobody at the wheel, Jack?
Just bumpy air.
Don't worry about Jack. I wouldn't trust anybody at the stick more than him.
It's not the turbulence that bothers me. It's other stuff like, I don't know, mid-air collisions.
We're over the ocean. There's a proximity alarm set to go off if any solid object larger than a paperback comes within 20 nautical miles of this bird.
If you say so. Anyway, just from the logistics of it, you can see it'd be a nightmare to shut off Carnivore.
What about blocking the system electronically?
What do you mean?
Shut it down from the inside out.
I still don't follow.
Well, we already know they're inside, and we can now detect them, right? So why not trap them inside the system? Quarantine them like a virus. Wouldn't that prevent access to other systems?
You're talking like a cockroach trap?
A what?
A cockroach trap. You know, the roaches go in, but they don't come out.
Wait a minute. I see what you're saying. A one-way door.
Exactly.
Is that possible?
Anything's possible, Jack. Finding a way to do it is the trick. It won't be easy on my own.
You're not on your own. You have the unconditional support of my people, and that support comes from the highest levels. We're already confident you're on our side. I think I can trust you, and that's enough for anybody else.
McEwen still looked skeptical, but she had already committed herself to trusting Bolin, and the executioner knew she wouldn't let them down. If there was anything he'd learned about this tough and intelligent woman in the past 24 hours, it was that once she had committed to something, she stuck with it to the bitter end.
Then I guess I'll just have to find a way to stop this maniac.
There's a lot at stake.
Don't remind me.
She cracked her knuckles and got to work.
Well, guess I'd better get